Attention, attention. This is History Lost in Time.
And welcome to episode 68 of the History Lost in Time podcast. This podcast is available in German and English and can be found on YouTube, Spotify, Podcast.de, Blue Sky and Instagram. There's also a music-based partner project on YouTube called HLITAI Music.
The topic of this episode.
This episode is about the inventor Christian Hülsmeyer, who took a crucial step towards radar in 1904. A crucial step that was ignored and forgotten. It's topics like this that truly bring the name of my podcast, History Lost in Time, to life. Because Hülsmeyer's invention was indeed forgotten by the world before being rediscovered much later. The question of who invented radar has been much debated. I think one can make a good argument for Christian Hülsmeyer, but the British radar inventor, Sir Robert Watson Watt, put it best when he said at a conference with Hülsmeyer in 1953, "I am the father of radar and you are its grandfather." Why I consider this accurate will become clear as the episode progresses. In the first half of the episode, I will describe Hülsmeyer's invention and its historical context. In the second half, we will delve into the exciting but speculative what-if discussion and consider how Hülsmeyer's invention could have influenced the world.
Political agenda and background.
None.
The sources that were used.
Book 1. Caius Becker, Eyes Through Night and Fog, The Radar Story. E.S. Mittler und Sohn GmbH, Herford, 1980. Book 2, Through Space and Night by David Pritchard, Motor Buchverlag, Stuttgart, 1992. Also as usual, online sources. Christian Hülsmeyer was born in 1881 in Eidelstedt, a town located between Bremen and Osnabrück in Lower Saxony. Hülsmeyer was a bright boy who quickly caught the attention of his teachers. Due to his lively and inquisitive mind, he received additional education and showed an early aptitude for physics. How did this young physicist come to develop a radar system in 1904? The two book sources describe this very vividly. In Pritchard's book, it says on page 13, "When he came home one foggy evening, he witnessed a scene that would stay with him for a long time. His mother was trying to comfort a weeping woman whose son had drowned in a ship collision on the fog-shrouded Weser River." And on page 34 of Becker's book, it says, "The newspapers of the turn of the century were constantly reporting on horrific maritime disasters. Is there nothing that can prevent a fully loaded passenger steamer from suddenly being rammed at full speed by a careless coal tramp in the dead of night and fog? Is there nothing that could warn a captain on the dangerous North Atlantic route of the imminent approach of a rock-hard iceberg?" This is what motivated the young Hülsmeyer. Wasn't there something that ships could use to protect themselves from collisions? At the Bremen seminar, Hülsmeyer was able to demonstrate in an experiment that Hertzian waves, which had been discovered several decades earlier, were reflected by metallic objects, though he was not the first to prove this experimentally. Building on this, he developed a device consisting of a transmitter, a separate receiver, simple electronics, and a bell. Its operation was simple. The transmitter emitted radio waves, the receiver listened for the reflections, and as soon as it received them, it triggered the bell as an audible warning. In principle, this was a simple obstacle warning radar. In the spring of 1904, Hülsmeyer demonstrated the apparatus in Cologne. Becker describes the experiment on page 34.
"On the pedestrian bridge of the Hohenzollern Bridge in Cologne, there was a small traffic jam on this 18th of May 1904. There was actually nothing to see. Of the 30 or so onlookers, not even half knew what was going on. And even this half, the initiated, had only a rather vague idea which tentatively revolved around the word telemobiloscope.
Hülsmeyer succeeded in proving his point. His apparatus could reliably confirm the presence of ships. However, the system was still quite fragile and had to be constantly readjusted by the inventor. Contemporary reactions were friendly, but there was no interest. Becker summarizes the reactions on page 35 as follows.
A technical gimmick, interesting proof of a theory, but hardly of practical value. Insignificant, since every steam whistle carries farther than the apparatus can measure.
On page 15, Pritchard quotes the Cologne Gazette of May 18, 1904, which states,
"The invention is based on the principle of wireless telegraphy and aims to sight ships and other metallic objects at sea."
This article mentions a range of 3 to 5 kilometers. Hülsmeyer was able to demonstrate this range to an international audience in Rotterdam in the summer of 1904. However, the international audience praised the inventor but showed no interest either. Hülsmeyer also approached the German Imperial Navy, but according to Pritchard's book, Admiral von Tirpitz rejected the invention, stating, page 15,
"No interest, we have better ideas."
There were neither production orders nor commissions for testing. In 1905, Hülsmeyer had to abandon his telemobiloscope and turn to other pursuits. He nevertheless became a successful man, albeit in the field of hot water and machine tool manufacturing. Pritchard's book is merciless in its assessment of the reactions at the time. On pages 20 and 21, it states,
"In retrospect, it is astonishing that this system found no interest in the naval world of that era. Some even claim that this lack of awareness was nothing short of criminal, and even suggest that the Titanic disaster could have been averted had the ship been equipped with this invention."
Was that really the case? We'll get to that in the speculative part of this episode. Was Hülsmeyer's device already radar? Radar is the abbreviation for radio detection and ranging. Hülsmeyer's device could radio detect objects, but it couldn't measure anything. On page 36, Becker describes the device's capabilities as follows.
"No, it wasn't radar, nor was it a radio measuring device. With his primitive apparatus, Hülsmeyer could only receive an echo that told him, there is something somewhere that's reflecting your radio beam. He received a message, but he couldn't measure anything. Radar can do much more. It doesn't just report something is there, but it knows exactly where it is and can even distinguish what it is. Radar sees with eyes that humans don't have. It sees beyond the limits of optical vision."
Why did the world of 1904 show no interest in Hülsmeyer's device? From today's perspective, this may seem incomprehensible. But when we think of radar, we immediately think of airspace and maritime surveillance. It's important to remember that Hülsmeyer marketed his device as a means of preventing ship collisions. Maritime surveillance wasn't a consideration, and military aviation simply didn't exist in 1904. The media coverage also played a role. Contemporary publications described his device as based on wireless telegraphy. In many people's heads, this caused an immediate switch to the term radio. And ship owners and naval officials in particular thought, we already have that. Pritchard states on page 18,
"The most obvious reason for the failure was that most ship owners couldn't distinguish between wireless telegraphy and the concept of radio direction finding."
Hülsmeyer was only considered the inventor of radar after the Second World War because Winston Churchill wanted to knight Sir Watson Watt, the inventor of British radar, and because Hülsmeyer's descendants fought for recognition of the inventor's achievement. This sparked a minor political controversy. In 1953, the conference I mentioned earlier took place, where Hülsmeyer and Watson Watt met, and the Briton coined the phrase that he was the father of radar and Hülsmeyer the grandfather. Why do I find this formula appropriate? So Watson Watt is undoubtedly the inventor of British radar. Hülsmeyer's apparatus isn't exactly radar, but it was an important step in that direction, and had its potential been recognized, something worthwhile could have been made of it. Hülsmeyer died in 1957. In 2019, he was posthumously honored by the IEEE, the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, with two commemorative plaques on the banks of the Rhine in Cologne. Let's now leave the historical part of the episode and enter the speculative one. What could Hülsmeyer's apparatus do in 1904, and what couldn't it do? It was definitely small enough to be installed on a ship. The idea was to mount it on a height-adjustable rotating tower or mast. The technology of 1904 allowed for a maximum range of 5 kilometers. The height adjustment enabled simple triangulation to measure the distance to a target, and the rotation allowed for 360-degree surveillance. However, the device was still very fragile and not very robust. Furthermore, it could not transmit an image via a monitor, but only provide an audible warning. In addition, the distance measurement was very inaccurate. At best, an object could be measured precisely to within 500 meters. If we assume that the Hülsmeyer radar would have been adopted and further developed by the Navy or civilian companies, we shouldn't expect any technological leaps or extraordinary commitment. We would know what radar could achieve and what significance it would attain, but the people of that time wouldn't. Therefore, in my speculation, I assume that the development of electronics wouldn't have changed significantly. Let's return to Pritchard's Titanic speculation. Could a Hülsmeyer radar from 1912 on the Titanic have prevented the collision with the iceberg? In principle, radar can detect an iceberg. However, radar is best reflected by metal. The echo from an iceberg would be weaker. With a range of 5 kilometers for metal objects, we can therefore assume a range of perhaps 2 to 3 kilometers for an iceberg. What was the exact situation on the Titanic? The Titanic was traveling at approximately 22.5 knots, about 41 kilometers per hour. The lookouts only saw the iceberg at a distance of about 450 to 600 meters. This gave the crew less than 40 seconds to react. Not enough time for a ship of that mass. Had a Hülsmeyer radar detected the iceberg at 3 kilometers, the crew would have had 4 minutes to react. At 2 kilometers, they would still have had 2 minutes and 40 seconds. That would have been enough to prevent a collision. However, radio equipment at that time was owned by electronics companies, such as Marconi. Technically speaking, the radio operators were not part of the ship's crew. On the Titanic, the radio operators were primarily occupied with receiving and sending private messages. This is why an iceberg warning was missed, as the radio operators were overwhelmed by the flood of private messages. If these same people had also been monitoring a Hülsmeyer radar and felt disturbed by its beeping, which is possible with faulty feedback, then they might have switched it off or, just like the iceberg warnings, initially ignored it. And yes, false feedback was certainly possible. In heavy seas, waves can reflect radar. This wasn't the case on the night the Titanic sank. The sea was very calm. However, it's quite conceivable that the radio crew would have switched off the radar the day before and forgotten to switch it back on. Do I assume people to have been stupid? Not really. When radar was actually installed on warships in 1939, 40, and 41, and mind you, operated by sailors who knew exactly what it was for, many officers and commanders still doubted its usefulness and accuracy. There is evidence that, for example, the commander of HMS Suffolk, which located and then shadowed the Bismarck in 1941, initially didn't think much of radar. When it was finally activated and a radar echo was received, the commander decided to investigate and steered his cruiser toward the echo, only to appear extremely close to the Bismarck. Only a very quick turn back into the fog saved the Suffolk from destruction. Had the Bismarck reacted quickly, the light cruiser could have been pulverized by its 38-centimeter guns. Therefore, I don't think I'm underestimating the people of 1912, if they didn't recognize the significance of Hülsmeyer's invention in 1904, and if the importance of iceberg warnings via radio wasn't properly assessed in 1912, then a report from a Hülsmeyer warning radar wouldn't necessarily have been taken seriously either. Let's speculate further. Suppose the German Navy had purchased and further developed the Hülsmeyer system in 1904. What would have been possible then during the First World War? A rotating Hülsmeyer radar system could certainly have been installed on large warships. Hülsmeyer's system operated at a wavelength of 50 centimeters. The size of the antennas would therefore have been roughly comparable to radar systems from the Second World War. A radar reflection signal could have been reported using a bell or perhaps a light bulb. However, reliability and robustness would not have been very high. Furthermore, distance determination would only have been possible through very rough adjustment of the antenna height. Let's take a closer look. Why was there no distance measurement? Simply put, it was due to a lack of electronic components. Hülsmeyer's radar emitted a continuous beam. In contrast, radar systems of the Second World War emitted pulses. The time interval between sending and receiving the pulse could be used to calculate the distance. This isn't possible with continuous beam systems, and the electronics components for pulse transmission simply didn't exist in the First World War. Would a Hülsmeyer radar have made a difference in 1914? Possibly. In darkness and bad weather, German ships in the North Sea could have located British patrols, allowing them to attack or evade them. It would have become more difficult for the British to maintain the naval blockade under cover of darkness. Furthermore, the German fleet would have had a decisive advantage in night and fog battles, especially during the night part of the Battle of Jutland. British destroyers would have had a very difficult time approaching German ships undetected, while German torpedo boats would have found it easier to do so against British vessels. German losses could have been lower and British losses higher. For example, if a Hülsmeyer radar had informed Admiral Scheer there is a large metal object to the north-northeast, he could have maneuvered the fleet much more precisely and minimized the risk of a close-range encounter. This might even have saved the SMS Pommern. Admittedly, you can't direct fire without range finding, but you can increase combat readiness. Imagine, the gunners know 5 minutes before visual contact where to aim their guns. The time saved during zeroing would have been significant. Furthermore, by 1918, there would have certainly been improvements in robustness, accuracy, and range, especially if a situation had arisen where radar proved its worth. In 1914, the Hülsmeyer radar would likely still have been based on coherers. Another name for these is fritters. These are electromechanical components, the forerunners of detector diodes. By 1918, these could have been replaced with vacuum triodes, which would have guaranteed significantly better operation. While a modern screen or scope wouldn't have been possible as a display by 1918, at least an analog display with a moving light dot would have been feasible. Brown tubes already existed, and theoretically an A-scope, such as those used by the German Liechtenstein BC night fighter radar or the British Chain Home system, would have been possible. However, brown tubes were still very fragile and quite delicate laboratory instruments at that time. Practical use on a warship would have been virtually impossible. An alternative to the visual display would have been an audible output. The radar echo would have been heard through headphones like sonar instead of being seen on a display. By 1918, new types of phase shifters, which had already been tested for radio direction finding in 1916, and dipole arrays would have also been available. This would have made direction finding more precise, and there would have also been moderate improvements in distance estimation. A radar with a range of 15 kilometers would not have been impossible in 1918. However, This would still only have allowed the detection of large objects. Detecting the periscopes of submarines or aircraft would have been virtually impossible. Nevertheless, at least near ports such as Wilhelmshaven or around Heligoland and the East Frisian Islands, the installation of coastal radar systems would have made sense, serving as an early warning system or for locating returning friendly units. Furthermore, a Hülsmeyer radar could only ever have functioned as a warning device. During World War II, radar could be used for fire control. A Hülsmeyer system would not have offered this level of precision, and there was no way to develop automated radar analysis. It was simply beyond the capabilities of the electronics of the time. The crew would also have had to expect frequent false alarms. Even during World War II, this was a problem, and that was with significantly better electronic components. There would thus have been a constant struggle between being overly nervous and becoming desensitized to the device's alarms. Furthermore, the technology would have remained stuck in the decimeter wave range. Centimeter waves, such as those used by the British H2S in World War II, were based on the magnetron, which did not exist in World War I and could not have been built. So, possibilities existed. But would that have decisively changed naval warfare? My assessment is tactically yes, but strategically no. One shouldn't assume that only the Germans would have used Hülsmeyer's radar system. Hülsmeyer's 1904 patents weren't a state secret, and his demonstration was public. The Allies could have developed their own radar system within a very short time, and there would have been a physics-electronics arms race during the First World War, in which the Allies, with their superior industrial capacity, would ultimately have had the advantage. To what extent the Germans could have exploited an initial advantage up to around 1916-17 is at least questionable.
A few finishing words.
On page 17, Pritchard concludes the Hülsmeyer story with the following words.
The Hülsmeyer story is quite well known, but for many years this discovery was dismissed as practically useless. Various reasons were given, such as interference in the receiver from reflections of the ship itself, or the lack of technical knowledge at the time, which supposedly prevented this device from playing a serious role in radar history. These are merely simple excuses, unfortunately often originating from British sources. They demonstrate a clear lack of recognition and appreciation for the remarkably modern concepts in Hülsmeyer's device.
In fact, in the 1930s, radar pioneers in both Germany and Great Britain started from scratch and did not base their work on Hülsmeyer and his patents. So we have a classic case here of an inventor who was too far ahead of his time and was ultimately forgotten. I am all the more pleased that he at least received some recognition at the end of his life and was not forgotten by history. And I hope that this episode will contribute a little to that effect.
Thank you. This was History Lost in Time.